to the 379th edition of Travelitch Radio, the show that lets you scratch your lust for travel from the friendly confines of your home. I'm your host, Dan Schlossberg, along with Mary Ellen Nugent-Lee.
We know you can't travel yet, but we also know that things will change, hopefully sooner than later. In the meantime, we're continuing this weekly show so that a half hour of armchair travel will take you back to the good old days and help you understand that they will come back soon.
And tonight our guest is Chez Chezek, Executive Director of the Outdoor Writers Association of America. Welcome, Chez, to Travelitch Radio.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
And we're glad to have you. You know, when I think of the Outdoor Writers Association of America, I think of people who like writing about hunting and fishing, but it's actually much more than that, isn't it?
Yeah, we really seek to be the voice of the outdoors, and so we really want to be representative of all the outdoors. We have deep, deep roots in hunting and fishing, but now we've really evolved beyond that to cover a variety of all sorts of different outdoor pursuits.
Can you tell us how, when, and where the OWAA got started, Chez?
Certainly, happy to. 1927 in Chicago is when we were founded. Our members got together and recognized the need to have an association for outdoor writers, and it's outdoor writers because back then everyone was writing. You know, even photography was in its infancy, so they named it the Outdoor Writers Association.
Wasn't the Outdoor Writers Association of America formed as an offshoot of the Isaac Walton League? Can you tell us what that was and whether it still exists?
Yeah, so not exactly an offshoot. It was founded at a dinner of the Isaac Walton League, and I'm very honored to actually have the menu from that dinner hanging on my office wall. And you can see on the back where it's signed by the founding six members who said, you know, we're going to do this, and signed all their names, and then they jotted down a list of other people that they knew that thought would be good founding members with them.
And the North American Travel Journalists Association, which I co-founded in 1991, also started with just six members and mushroomed into, I think we have over 400 now. How big is the OWAA now?
Yeah, so the founding six members, it was five men and one woman. And so she was certainly kind of groundbreaking at the time, which is awesome to have that diversity for its time, at least, maybe not these days. It's great that she was represented there. Yeah, now we're about 630 strong. Plus, we've got another 100 or so what we call supporting groups. These are different brands and tourism boards that support our organization as well.
Does your membership extend outside North America?
It's predominantly American. There are other associations for Canada and other countries and things like that. So we really focus on the U.S. But we do have a number of members that are outside the U.S. who maybe they're expat Americans or they're just passionate about the outdoors, too, and want to stay in touch. So we've got members all over the U.S. and then a few in Europe, a couple in Australia and other places as well, just kind of here and there, predominantly, though, in the U.S.
We're talking with Chez Chezek, Executive Director of the Outdoor Writers Association of America.
Chez, what are the primary goals of the Outdoor Writers Association of America?
Well, it really comes down to four things. One, we want to help improve the professional skills of our members, so really giving them the tools that they need to help them improve their craft and their abilities. We really want to make sure that we're setting a high ethical and communication standards and making sure that our members are living up to those standards. So in some ways, maybe being a little bit of a watchdog of sorts. We really want to encourage public enjoyment and conservation of natural resources. So doing whatever we can to get those outdoor messages out there to help inspire people to get outside or maybe to help them conserve the natural world so that they always have a place to play, whatever their outdoor activity may be. And then finally, we really want to mentor the next generation of professional outdoor communicators, so really helping foment the next generation of professional outdoor media.
Do you keep in touch with your membership with publications and conferences?
We do. We've got a member magazine called Outdoors Unlimited, and it's fun, too, with an organization as old as ours to be able to go back and to see some of the magazines that we've produced over the years and just tapping into that kind of longevity in history. And we traditionally have an in-person conference, which is always kind of a highlight of the year. We've got, you know, members who have been members for so long that they really look forward to just getting back and seeing all their friends. We've got an amazing longevity of membership. I met a member at a trade show not too long ago who said he had joined in 1968. So he has been a member longer than I've been alive, and I'm no spring chicken.
How has the coronavirus pandemic impacted your operations this year?
Well, it's really put a pressure on us, just like it has virtually every other association out there. We couldn't just go about business as usual. So we had to postpone our usual in-person conference, which is going to be in Jay Peak, Vermont. So we shifted that to a year later. And we quickly pivoted, everyone's favorite word lately, pivoted to a virtual event. And it was great in that, you know, from pressure like that, it really helps drive innovation sometimes. And so for us to quickly pivot to a virtual event and show our members how we can also connect in various new ways was really kind of an eye-opener to a lot of our leadership. And now people are really excited at the prospect of being able to engage with our membership, provide them the resources, the inspiration, the professional development that they need year long. So now we're looking into doing webinar series. We're looking to do a regular annual conference as well as the in-person conference, recognizing that we can do things like our membership meeting. We can have it virtually so anybody could attend from the safety of their own home. And so it's really opened quite a few doors for us. It's been nerve-wracking, of course, as it has for everybody. It's certainly been a challenge. But like I said, that kind of pressure really created some new innovation and some new drive and direction for us to just really think outside the box.
Just last week on this show, when we hosted Katie O'Reilly, adventure and lifestyle editor of Sierra Magazine, she emphasized the importance of sustainable and eco-friendly travel. How important are those topics, along with conservation and preservation of natural resources, to the Outdoor Writers Association of America?
Oh, it's absolutely critical. I mean, you know, as much as we like to promote our respective activities, be it backcountry skiing or fishing, scuba, whatever it might be, as much as we like to promote the sports that we're engaged in, if we don't have the resource, then there's no sport. There's no way to get out into the natural environment in the way that we most prefer. So really, it's first and foremost for us to also ensure that we're doing what we can to help inspire people to recreate outside, but to do it in a responsible fashion so that we can protect that resource for ourselves and, of course, for future generations, for them to be able to enjoy it as well.
We're talking with Chess Chesek, Executive Director of the Outdoor Writers Association of America.
Does your group advocate for any particular political positions, such as protecting those natural resources from climate change?
You know, I wouldn't necessarily say that we have political positions. It's kind of a yes and no answer. You know, we're a nonprofit, a 501c3, so we don't weigh into politics as a lobbyist or maybe more of a trade association might do. We would never side with a certain candidate, but we'll certainly get behind certain legislation just to support it or promote it if it's going to be if it's going to help protect the natural resources. That's the kind of thing that we look to support. And one of the great things about our organization is that it really does span kind of the political spectrum. You have people who are very passionate, call them crunchy, kind of on the left side of the aisle. Other people who would be on the right side of the aisle who are very passionate in very similar ways. And we can all agree on, you know, preserving these environments, preserving the natural resources, having smart conservation to help us, again, ensure that we all have those places to recreate that we love so much.
Do you find your members specialize in particular fields, such as hiking, biking, fishing, camping, backpacking, rafting, boating, kayaking, natural studies? I could go on and on.
Yes, all of them. No, seriously, we really seek to represent the gamut of outdoor activities that are out there. Again, we do have long roots, deep roots in fishing and hunting, and that's certainly a big part of what our members cover. But more and more, we're starting to see particularly younger members, younger media who are joining our ranks, who, like I said, might be covering something like scuba or surfing, backcountry skiing. You know, we want to make sure that we really are the voice of the outdoors, and we really actively seek to reach out to those new younger media or media that are just covering maybe a different angle of the outdoors that we haven't even considered yet. So, you know, tried and true categories such as hiking, we absolutely cover that, camping, definitely. But we want to make sure that we're covering all those other outdoor pursuits and sports out there as well. But then a lot of our members, you know, they really do focus sometimes almost entirely on conservation issues or maybe wildlife management. So they're really much more on sometimes an even more technical side of outdoor media. Maybe they're writing for trade publications. Maybe it's a publication that's even specific to a certain species. So it really does run the gamut of outdoors in really any way that you could virtually imagine.
40 years ago, Tez, I covered the OWAA convention in Snowmass, Colorado, and found a great overlap between outdoor writers and travel writers. Do you agree?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's been a long frustration of mine, if I will, if I can, that there's still sort of a gap between them. It's sort of silly if you think about it, because virtually anybody who goes outdoors is often going to be traveling to get there, unless it's a resource that's literally right outside your front door. You're at the very least hopping in a car, maybe you're getting on a train, whatever. The minute you're getting onto a plane and doing some longer distance stuff, it's clearly, obviously, travel. But there are so many outdoor activities that people have to travel to in order to enjoy them. I mean, for example, you might have somebody in Maine who loves to ski, but of course, you know, they might want to get out to British Columbia. They might want to get out to Colorado, Idaho. And so they're going to travel to go enjoy their pursuit in a new environment. So there's so much crossover with adventure travel, the outdoors, and all these different categories and things like that, that I'd really love to see them kind of come together a little bit more. And I know in the past, me and others have tried to kind of bridge that gap by introducing a travel segment to the outdoor retailer trade show, for example. And we made some good headway, but I think there's still a lot more work that could be done there.
You know, I also wonder if the word writers describes your members today. Don't you have bloggers, broadcasters, and even authors in your group too?
Yeah, it's sort of funny. We love the history and longevity of the name. It's never changed. We're in our 93rd year. So we're still the Outdoor Writers Association. As I noted, when we were founded, they were all writers. But now it's so many fantastic photographers, videographers, bloggers, podcasters. It's really an outdoor media association. So we don't want to, you know, ever be pigeonholed into just writers, because we're so much more than that. And as you guys know, these days, your average quote unquote writer is probably also some kind of photographer and is probably doing some stuff digitally as well. And like a lot of us, you know, we're kind of multitasking, multi-platform, and doing everything we can to tell great stories about the outdoors.
I once had a forestry student as my roommate in Syracuse, and I was never quite clear on what forestry was, but maybe you can help me out.
Yeah, I'm no expert either, but I love forestry programs. I just love the thought of them, because they're really, you know, focused on planning and protecting sort of the forage heritage, providing the raw material for protecting forestry. You know, I love the fact that Yale founded a forestry school in 1900, which is now the Yale School of the Environment. So there's really a rich history of forestry programs with a variety of universities, a lot of them out west, but some in the east too.
Well, I remember the forestry student well because he had an axe, and I once cut my knee with it and had 14 stitches in my knee. You can still see the scar.
Oh, wow. He was legitimate.
It was definitely an accident. And we're talking with Chess Chesek, who's the executive director of the Outdoor Writers Association of America. And you are listening to Travel It's Radio with Dan Schlossberg and Mariella Nugent-Lee. Listen live on iTunes or blogtalkradio.com, or check out the archive show on Facebook. Mariella?
Kez, we're curious about your own personal background. How did you become an outdoor writer?
I've always just been a passionate storyteller. I've always just loved to read. And I think, it was sixth grade, I wrote an article and I used the word flat in it because it took place in London. And my teacher took me aside and she said, how do you know this word? What is this word? And I said, well, it's an apartment in London. And she said, you need to write. She just kind of inspired me to start writing. Later in life, I developed a deep passion for the outdoors. It all started with a ski trip out to kind of a crashing at a friend of a friend's place in Aspen. And I just got so hooked by the West that I came back. I was living in Washington, D.C. at the time, and I just said, how do I get into the outdoor industry? And I started with a job at the Bailey's Crossroads REI, selling bikes. I didn't even know anything about bikes, but they trained me up as best they could. And all of a sudden, I was getting into the gear side. And from there, I got various jobs with outdoor nonprofits like American Hiking Society, the American Alpine Club, and really just kind of continued to develop along those veins. And at a certain point, I realized I was traveling and getting out to all these wonderful places, and I love to write, and why was I not writing about these outdoor adventures? And so finally just started doing it myself, and just did everything I could to help network and figure out different outdoor outlets and publications and get to meet editors. I did a lot of work joining the Society of American Travel Writers. I'm still on their board, so still doing a lot of work with that organization. And just trying to do everything I could to get out to those wonderful places, tell people about it, and hopefully inspire them to get out as well.
Oh, what a job. Wow. Mm-hmm. We're also curious about the makeup of your group. You said it was started out as 5-1. Is it mostly male now, or do you have female members too? And in fact, do you find a growing number of women among your newer members?
Definitely pretty male dominated, but that is changing, and we're very happy to see it changing. We're very much trying to make it as diverse a group as we can, and ensuring that, again, we have voices from all the different outdoor pursuits, but certainly want to make sure that we have a good balance of men and women, people of color involved for sure, and really want to do what we can just to, make it as diverse, as inclusive, and again, truly the voice of the outdoors as much as we can. And I was pleasantly surprised when I came on board, we've got some fantastic, just awesome powerhouse women who are on our board, who are chairing committees. They're just out there getting stuff done. And these are just fantastic outdoors people, highly skilled, who know their craft, know their passions, whether it's outdoors photography, usually both, writing, whatever it might be. And our next two presidents, because we have sort of a lineup of vice presidents that then take over, our next two presidents will both be women. And our current president's a wonderful guy, and he's going to do a great job this year. But right behind him, we've got two awesome women, in the wings, waiting to take over and show what they can do. So we're really excited, certainly for the future. We're so excited to see some of our new members are younger women. And it's just fun to see them stepping up and saying, hey, I'm a bow hunter, or I'm a surfer, and I'm passionate, again, about telling these stories. So I want a professional group that can help support me, inspire me, provide mentorship, maybe grants and scholarships and whatever other professional development we can. So we're really excited for the future and a lot of the things that we'll be augmenting as this kind of newer wave of membership comes in, steps up, and eventually becomes leaders themselves.
That is great.
With 3 weeks left before Labor Day, is it fair to say that outdoor vacations are on the upswing this year because of the chance to get away from home and practice social distancing at the same time?
Oh, yeah. It's awesome to see. We're loving it. We're loving this huge uptick in people realizing that maybe they haven't gone hiking in a long time, or maybe they haven't done it before. Now is their chance, because our usual travel options are limited, that people can kind of focus on their own backyard, or maybe it's a state park down the road and they're recognizing that they can get out and have a wonderful day. And maybe it's just, something as simple as picnicking in the park, but they're going to go for a stroll. They're going to get on those trails. They're going to get out there. And we love seeing what's going on in that regard, in that it's getting more people outside, getting them more excited about the outdoors, hopefully taking their kids and inspiring them as well. You know, we've heard so many stories about, bike stores selling out their entire inventory. A friend of mine in Montana went into a big box outdoor store, and he said normally they've got something like 1,200 fishing poles on stock. 1,200. He said they were down to 7. You know,
wow.
So it's great to see so many people really getting engaged with the outdoors. The balance there, the thing we have to be careful about, of course, is making sure that some of these resources aren't trampled, that we're not loving it to death, and that we're helping educate people on the correct way to recreate responsibly.
Well, if there's a shortage of fish, I'll know who to blame.
Exactly.
I also wanted to ask you, Chaz, are rentals and motorhomes up this year because more people want to get away but are afraid of hotels and restaurants during the pandemic?
They're through the roof. The sales have been strong. I think it's been 20% plus growth for the past 4 or 5 years. Now we're seeing astronomical numbers. In a similar vein, just like I was talking about the fishing poles being sold out, you can sometimes go by RV dealerships and they've got hardly any new campers or RVs on their lots. I know the Recreational Vehicle Industry Association told me recently that rental companies are reporting that they're up anywhere from 300% to 1,300% this year. Everybody is trying to get out there. And an RV is a great way to what I call protect your bubble, you know, to get out there, grab your family unit, whoever that might be, pile in, go out, have a fantastic experience, get out on the trails, on the rivers, whatever, but still kind of maintain your little bubble, and you're protecting your bubble without too much exposure to others around you, like you might have in maybe a traditional travel environment where you're maybe going to a big hotel in a big city, which is normally a great experience. But right now, of course, people are just trying to protect themselves from that.
We're talking with Chaz Chazek, Executive Director of the Outdoor Writers Association of America.
Chaz, how long have you been Executive Director of OWAA? And since this is a travel show, what travel spots can you recommend?
10 months, not very long. I'm the new guy, virtually the new guy at OWAA. But, I've got 20-something years managing outdoor nonprofits and in the adventure travel industry and things like that. So it was a really great opportunity for me to be able to step into the executive director's role with an organization that is so august, that has such a great history and lineage. And, you know, I'm a passionate storyteller, and now I can go help and work with other passionate storytellers. So it's only been about 10 months or so, but it's been a fantastic start, and I'm really excited for all the things we've got on the horizon, all the things that we're working towards in the future to develop better programming, again, diversify our membership, reach out to every element of the industry that we can to let them know that we're a resource. So it's been a wonderfully intense 10 months, but it's been great. As for travel spots, where do I begin? I've had the opportunity to kind of live all over the U.S. in multiple places. I've also, through the travel industry, had the opportunity to travel to I think it's almost 40 countries now. But there's so much out there. There's so much great stuff. I would like to point out, particularly these days, we've got this great, big, fantastically diverse country here alone in the United States. It's amazing. And to go from, say, Key West to Maine to, Oklahoma to Utah, Alaska, you know, the coast of California, such amazing places, so much diversity, so many great, fantastic places to get lost in. And a little bit too often, I think people really focus on the big names. They focus on the big national parks and stuff, which are, of course, fantastic. That is why they're national parks. You know they're going to be good. But also, I mean, there's so many great spaces that are state parks, that are maybe BLM land, that are national forests. City parks sometimes can be amazing too, depending on where you're at. So there's such a great diversity of things already out there right outside our back door. And it's kind of fun. I had the opportunity to go to a pretty well-to-do school back in Connecticut. I grew up in New England. And upon graduation, all these kids that I knew had, you know, some pretty significant means. They all said, "We're going to go backpack in Europe." And I said, "What about our country?" And I went home and back to my hometown in Massachusetts. I became a local photographer and reporter. I saved all my money for a year, And then I just drove west. And I just did it for 2.5 months just to see as much of the United States as I could. So, I mean, right there alone, you have basically endless diversity in places to go. But then, you know, to go beyond that, Canada, so many fantastic locations, Latin America. I mean, don't get me started on Namibia. I'm a big fan of Namibia and Africa. I mean, we could. How many hours do we have for the show? I could go on and on and on. There are so many fantastic places out there. The key is just to get out wherever they might be, whether it's Norway or your backyard. You can have a fantastic experience wherever you go virtually.
It reminds me of that slogan that used to say, "See America first." With plane travel way off, do you think Americans are taking that advice to heart?
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's why we're seeing that big boom in all the outdoor recreation right now, as people are starting to discover or maybe rediscover all those places. Certainly, you know, friends who maybe live in a city and maybe didn't even know about some Forest Service land that was only an hour away, or maybe it's a city park. I think of like the Blue Hills outside of Boston. You know, it's the kind of thing where a lot of people probably live in that city and it's a great city. They have a great time, but maybe they've just never gone out to the Blue Hills. Maybe they don't even know that they're skiing, you know, 20 minutes from downtown Boston, not to mention great hikes and other activities. So, yeah, there's definitely an opportunity for people to get out there, or maybe they're doing a cross-country drive. We recently were able to get out to the coast of North Carolina. Normally we would have flown. This time we drove out there. We knew somebody who had a cabin, so we felt it was safe, and we went out there and recreated there instead of maybe doing a bigger trip this year. We recently had a great experience. We realized that Amtrak has roomettes on some of their trains. There's these little tiny amazing rooms with two seats that convert into two bunk beds. And so our family and I, we hopped on an Amtrak because we knew, again, it was another good way to protect that bubble. And we just hopped on an Amtrak train right here from where we live in Cincinnati and just took it down the line. We went about 11 hours, went out to Charlottesville, Virginia, and just explored a town that we otherwise would not have gone to. And it was just a fantastic experience that we felt, you know, very safe, again, protecting our bubble in our own little rooms, in the roomettes on the Amtrak. And that was an experience that we certainly wouldn't have had because we just hadn't been forced into that option, which turned out to be a great option.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, winding down, how can Travel Itch Radio listeners learn more about Outdoor Writers Association of America?
Yeah, we've got our website, owaa.org. If someone is a media themselves or wants to become media, they can certainly check out the resources there. We've also got a Facebook page for Outdoor Writers Association of America, and that's really focused more on consumers, where we really try to highlight the work of our members. So there's some great, great things to learn and discover there as well.
Our guest tonight on Travel Itch Radio has been Chez Chesek, Executive Director of the Outdoor Writers Association of America. Thanks for giving us one of the best shows we've ever had on Travel Itch Radio.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate the opportunity. It was great.
It was great for us, too. And Mary Ellen, thank you for your time and your input. And listeners, now that baseball is back, how about a cool reading companion about the history of the game? Consider my book, The New Baseball Bible, an unorthodox illustrated history that's not only the most unusual baseball book ever published, but costs less than a sawbuck. Such a deal for 480 pages. Order on Amazon.com today as a gift for a special someone or even for yourself. And make sure you get the edition with Mike Trout on the cover. And that's it for this edition of Travel Itch Radio. Next week, we'll talk to Kanika Wahi, engineer and co-founder of a great new product called Nasal Guard. Now, this is Dan Schlossberg, along with co-host Mary Ellen Nugent-Lee, saying thank you for your time this time. Until next time, good night.